When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
If things didn't go right, I was an easy scapegoat, put it that way. Mm-hmm. And I was okay with that. But, you know, some people can't handle it, couldn't handle the pressure. Or they would put their head down and, you know, it would just mess their whole game up or mind up. I just said, all right, you can blame me as much as you want. Let's just go out and play and leave me alone for right now kind of thing. And, you know, so many people like, I don't know if you guys remember Billy Walsh that used to play the Metro Stars and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he goes, these guys were so dumb that they didn't take advantage of you. He goes, you were like the Dennis Rodman of soccer.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Crack Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Crack Podcast. You're on with DeMarcus Beasley, Aguchi and Yewu, and my name is Mauricio Mookie Wilson. We're so happy to be back. Thank you for the Crack crew for tuning in. Fellas, how you feel today?
It's been a minute.
It has been a minute. Look at Bees hasn't shaved. I got some stuff. I got some stubble.
I don't never shave though. Man, if I shave, I look like I'm 15 years old.
Our friends have cursed us out, stating that you know, we haven't recorded recently, but you know, we wanted to kind of, you know, wait for a special guest that we have on air today. In my eyes, he's a legend. He's a World Cup scorer, he's a MLS All-Star. And to me, and my co-host might beat me up on this, but he's the best Clint to ever play for the U.S. national team. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about Clint Mathis.
Oh, wow. Didn't you just say in the last episode that Clint Dempsey was the best American soccer player ever?
He did. This man's a bandwagon.
And then now
he's the best Clint.
You can't trust a New Yorker. You can't trust a New Yorker, man.
Say what?
What? BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. BetOnline has you covered from all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website now, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sports book experts.
We literally just spoke to Dips, and you said that he was the best American soccer player for you.
He's just trying to get MSG tickets.
And that's because Clint didn't get an opportunity to have the career that Dempsey had.
You know? Why didn't he have the opportunity?
He had injuries. We all have injuries.
He didn't have success.
How does that have
anything to do with opportunity?
He didn't have a long stint in Europe. And he's a victim of the time period that he played in.
Wow. Hey, yo, I see you laughing while you say it.
He don't even believe his words.
Yeah, he don't believe it.
Listen, I'm here to instigate and cause issues, But, you know, there's always some truth in that, right?
And, look, at the end of the day,
Clint was a man.
Clint was legit. He was the first America bad boy, real talk. Yeah. Like, he set the path for a lot of people, and people don't even know about that. So I'm excited to have him on.
Yeah, me too. Clint
played for the Metro Stars while being here in New York. He's the first soccer player I see live a really a rock star NBA lifestyle. You know, he had the restaurants on lock, the clubs on lock. The man had a Sprint deal. I don't know if you remember that. This is a time period where making long distance phone calls, you get charged extra, you know, and this man had a phone where he didn't have to pay a bill. I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Now that's normal.
B's got a Sprint deal. Everybody got a Sprint
deal. As soon as I retired, I got cut off. It's like, wait, you retired 2 months ago? Sorry, this phone's been disconnected.
We don't need you.
Did they let you keep the phone?
Yeah, they let me keep the phone.
All right, that's at least that.
But nah, I got that deal cut short real quick after I retired.
We're going to be a little bit different today with Clint Mathis. He's going to call in. You know, he's on the road. He has a different lifestyle now. So Clint will be calling in. So I'm excited for that, regardless, to speak to this man. And I think he'll give us a little bit more since he's not in the house with his kids and his wife. You know, I think he'll be a little more truthful. You know, we live the glory days.
He has no reason to lie.
We live the glory days, man. But talk about glory. United States has beaten Mexico in a final of a cup. Yeah, it's a cup. Nations League Cup. The first inaugural. I don't know what the hell it is. I don't know how it's from the Gold Cup. But they have won a championship. And I think it's so, so, so important for Greg Berhalter and the young core that they have. Guys, did you see the game? Obviously, Gooch did. And I heard Beasley was on the field. Tell me what your thoughts were. Did you cry? Did you get flashbacks at times where you beat Mexico?
Something today.
You on a roll today. Yeah, you on a roll today. I was just like any other American fan. I was happy the way they played, the way they battled back, the way they showed resilience in the game. You know, all those words that everyone's already described about the national team as far as how they got the job done against Mexico. So, you know, for me being now, obviously being a fan of U.S. soccer, I was happy to see them win, beat our rivals. And really, that was the first time in a long time. And I haven't seen anybody talk about this, but the first time in a long time where it felt like a rivalry. Yeah. The last couple of times, that's kind of why I asked Weston that question back in his episode. The last couple of times I've seen USA play Mexico, and this is on both teams, it was soft. Yeah. They wanted to play the game and wanted to get out as quick as possible. They didn't have that fiery edge, you know what I'm saying, to the match. So I was happy to get that they got back to that. And then, you know, they won. So I was happy to see them lift the cup.
Yeah, I doubled down on that. I wasn't pleased with their performance. I was pleased with their character, because for a long time, everybody's been saying that this young group has all the talent in the world. They just don't have the heart. And that game, for 90 plus minutes, extra time, you saw the heart. They didn't come back once. They came back twice and they beat Mexico. And I think this is the first. Oh, yeah, because the last couple matchups, Mexico has beaten them in the Gold Cup final after that as well. So for me, I was proud, and I think I saw, or I felt at least, the players understanding the importance of these games against CONCACAF teams, and that it's not easy, right? Like, regardless of where you're playing in Europe, you know, they understand now, you know, playing Honduras, it's not a guaranteed win. Playing Mexico is definitely not a guaranteed win. And they have some, they took some growing pains from this tournament. I'm glad that they were able to finally lift a trophy, because everybody's been waiting to hear them lift a trophy as a national team. So, you know, Beast has lifted hundreds of trophies in his day, you know. So I'm happy that these boys were able to essentially confirm their seasons, you know, because they won 13 titles overseas and now come back home and get this Nations League title.
Go ahead.
No, I want to say a big shout out to Greg Berhalter. I'm the first one to say that Greg is an experience. I'm the first one to say that, you know, I think that the United States deserve an experienced international coach. But Greg Berhalter made some key decisions. He got the win. And I just want to give a round of applause to Greg. Round of applause to you. I'm hoping that this builds confidence in yourself and your program and what you're trying to provide. And also, I think that for the players as a whole, like you guys said, this is hopefully will catapult them into a good momentum going into the World Cup qualifying and getting to the World Cup as a strong unit, you know. And I think they're battle tested a little bit, you know. But we can't get our hopes up. We still have a lot of work to do, right?
Hey, I got my hopes up. I'm saying right
your
now.
Hopes is
my
up.
My hopes is up. They play, you know what I'm saying? I was waiting for a game like this, and I'm glad they, you know, they came out and really showed, you know, the, not even, like you said, not just the talent, but the way they won it, you know, the you know, the attitude in which they played and all the energy and, you know, that urgency they played with. You know, I even liked when the ball came out of bounds and Greg ran and you know, threw the ball back in almost to, you know, himself.
Did he almost get tackled right there?
He almost got tackled as well. But, you know, like that, you know what I'm saying? I saw the urgency throughout the group, throughout the team, and not just on the people, not just the players on the field, but the bench, the coaching staff. And that's what you want, especially in CONCACAF. You're going to need that. You know, if you get down, you're going to be down in games. So it always depends on, you know, how, you, like Gooch said, your character and how you come back in those type of matches. And they did that. And, you know, like I'm ecstatic, man. I'm my hopes is up. So my hopes is, you know, it's high.
Gooch, who impressed you?
I would say that Weston stepped up as the leader of that team. I was thoroughly impressed with Weston, how he just understood his fight never deteriorated in any part of that game. He was run. And I've always said, like, he needs to start from a lower position to get back and forth. And him playing next to Acosta there allowed him to have the game in front of him instead of playing with his back to the goal all the time. And, you know, for a player that's not 6'5", 6'4", he was winning everything on the offensive headers. And I was like, wow, this guy's really taking this team on his shoulder and like telling them, come on, let's go. Even in the rumble, he was like, dude, let's do this. You know, Bees would have been in the corner just watching.
Man, drinking water.
Sipping his tea.
Bees have been stretching.
Don't play me like that.
But also he kept his head.
Yeah.
And for a young player and for an intense game like that, it's not easy to do. But he was always there for his teammates, first to step up, first to protect. And he just did a hell of a job, man. Bees, who impressed you?
Well, I mean, okay, you know what? I'm going to go before we get to that, because we talk a lot about, you know, players and how good they've been. And obviously, they deserved it. You know, they play well. But I want to switch it. Who are you guys not impressed with? We always talk about, you know, different players and how we – you know, they did
taking the Mookie route.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be real.
All right, you start off then.
So, I always say, obviously, Mark made a couple mistakes, but then as the game going on, the game went on, he got better and better. But I think the guy that I think was just dropped his level a bit was Acosta. I thought, and I was in the game, like towards the end, he made some good tackles, and he won a couple good balls in the middle of the field, but like his passing was off. I thought the level of the game was a bit high for him in the beginning, and I just felt that, you know, he struggled in the beginning, I think it went unnoticed a little bit because of just the battle with USA, Mexico, the rivalry, and obviously Mark having that mistake to the lead to the first goal. But I just thought his level was a bit under his level that he's usually playing at.
Mm-hmm. Mook?
Oh, I go next?
Yeah, you gotta
go next. I have two. I have Tim Ream. I think that he's a player that we've seen already is not on a level of the international play. I think he's very slow. I think he's not a good tackler and a good 1v1 defender. He's not great in the air. I just don't see what he brings to the table besides age. I'm sure Greg went with him off of experience. I want to say with Mark McKenzie, I think it was brilliant what he went through, because again, I think those scars he needed to know what that pace is and that intensity is. He showed, especially the following game, that he has the quality. His passing out of the back is better than what he showed against Mexico, but now he knows his speed. You will see him I think, flourish as a right center back in the future. And I'm happy and proud of him. And I think defensively, no matter what he did, he always was, elite, where you couldn't beat him 1v1, and gave a really, really strong presence in the back. I think we have to talk about Josh Sargent. You know, it's so important that we speak on our attacks and our striker, because we struggle to score goals. And Josh Sargent, for me, who I think is a talented player, had a season where he didn't produce a lot of goals. And you guys know scoring goals is about form. And I think you should be chosen on how you did during the season, how many goals you scored. And I think that
he is a nine.
You know, and unfortunately, he plays with a team that was relegated, a team that doesn't get a lot of service. So he doesn't even, not even as comfortable as he should be on an international level in front of the net, scoring with either foot. I mean, he had chances on his head. He had chances turning his back to the goal. And it just wasn't there. He has the quality. He's a good player.
So I'll ask you this, because I brought this up, because a lot of people are talking about Josh Sargent, and maybe he's not as clinical as people would want as a nine. And they brought up the same kind of debate that you're saying, that he's not scoring enough goals. So especially in the Honduras game, right? He didn't get any goals. Everyone's like, oh, you know, let's see about you, came in, or Pay Folk, he likes to be called, came back in, scored the goal at the end. If Gio had squared that ball that he missed wide and he tapped it in, and Josh has that one goal plus the save that he saved off the line, would he have then been all right, he had a really good game?
No, he had other chances besides that one ball that could have been squared to him.
No. I'm not saying he doesn't, but I'm saying if he had scored that, would your tone
be different? If Bees had hair, he'd be a model. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't. I hear what you're saying, Gooch, right? Because, like, it could be the smallest thing. It could be the smallest thing that decides if you had a good game or a bad game.
100%.
But as a nine in international, at least you need to just score one out of five chances you get. And he had five chances. He had no goals.
So you say Tim Ream, Josh Sargent. Who was the other one?
I just spoke about Mark and how I think that's Mark. A good thing what happened to him. You know, I'm glad that we won. But I'm also glad that it happened to him, because I think he's going to move forward stronger in the future.
I mean, I've told him before, my first start for the national team, I got a red card, right? And I thought my career was done, right? And, you know, feel upset because you know you can do better, but understand that and then make yourself better after that. And I think that it was a great learning curve for him, as well as the whole team, that game and this tournament and the level of competition. Let's say for mine, my player that I thought didn't play as well as I wanted him to was Serginho. And nobody thinks about that. And I think in the last friendlies, he had such an impact offensively, and like he was all over the place. And I felt in these last two games, it was kind of, not that he played terrible or anything like that, but he wasn't highlighted as he was, you know. And he played on the right in the first game, then he switched to the left. Hopefully he was more comfortable. And I think that both teams did a good job at just, you know, neutralizing his threats. You know, he had a couple good runs here and there, but I would have expected him to contribute a lot more.
We're talking about Christian, right?
No, I said Serginho. I mean, Christian.
Look.
At the end of the day, Christian is aware that he.
We have to talk about Christian.
Christian, listen, at the end of the day, Christian had one of the fewest touches on the ball in the game, right? And that was whether he couldn't find the ball, whether the team couldn't find him. At the end of the day, he didn't play to his level that we're used to, that we want him to. He's Captain America. We have all these expectations riding on him. But at the end of the day, when a player understands he hasn't been having the game, but then steps up to that moment.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to say. I mean, for me, it's like, all right, you know, not to say that I.
What moment? The penalty kick?
Yes.
Yeah, even in the second half. I mean, obviously the game gets stretched in the second half, right? You know, teams get tired. You know, the middle of the field is a little bit more open. So when the U.S. was finding Christian in those little pockets, you know, in the second half, right behind the center midfield, and he was able to run at Mexico.
He didn't produce anything from those passes, though.
Yeah, he did. I mean, they it didn't come to nothing, but he got
exactly. It didn't produce.
Passes. but he made the pass, and then obviously they didn't. You know, it didn't amount to nothing. But I'm saying, he got in those little pockets, and that's where you want Christian to be at. When the game opened up, yeah, he was a little bit more dangerous. But for me, it's star power. He's a star, right? And you know, you look I'm not comparing him to, you know, some of the best players in the world, but that's what they do sometimes.
Ronaldo doesn't have the best game every single time, but never. But has Christian performed yet for U.S. national team as he's projected to be?
Wait, in these last two games or in general?
In general.
I mean, yeah, man, there's games that he's held his team on his back.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, even if you go back to the qualifier and back in before 2018.
Yeah, I remember that 2018. I never saw one game. I remember the game against Costa Rica we went to in Red Bull Stadium.
You're talking about one game. I'm talking about the campaign.
Yeah.
There were games that, like,
you know, they didn't qualify in 2018, right?
Thank you.
So are you talking about qualifying?
I'm talking about as a whole. I just don't remember a game that was like, oh, Christian balled out so much.
You just said he did.
What are you talking about?
You just said he did.
He doesn't know what he's talking about, Beast.
What did I just say, Beast?
You said when Goose brought up the qualifiers in 2018, like, oh, yeah, the game against Costa Rica. Yeah.
I was at the game in Costa Rica and we lost. He didn't show up. And again, I didn't blame him for that, but I'm just saying.
Right, we get the point. You don't like Christian. We like Christian. Assume it. Say it.
But here's the problem, though. It's not about like. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love y'all, and I can criticize you about your game when you were playing.
True.
So it's not a situation where I feel like I'm against Christian. Hell no. I want Christian to be the solid player and the incredible player that he has a God gift to be. But I'm just, we have to, we talk real here. And in a really, really conversation, I don't know a game that I can recall that was a real game, right? A game that means something, that Christian was just phenomenal. I was like, man, this kid. And does he get a pass for
when
the
you
two
say
games?
A real game, you mean not a friendly?
Not a friendly.
Oh, well then, they ain't been many.
You can't, he just went through the whole 2018 campaign and granted, he didn't have last year.
Yeah, I mean, the game when we played against
I don't remember a game at Weston McKennie didn't show up for the United States.
That's
I don't remember a game.
That's a lie. Weston plays his game, but there's some, he's even said it on our podcast, there's some games that he just doesn't play well, you know what I mean?
But he's a factor in that game. He's an impact player. Nobody's gonna play perfect any game. We're not judging.
Okay. I didn't say perfect.
And Christian stepped up to score the damn goal.
The penalty. Okay. Do we give Christian a pass because of his long season?
No, you didn't let me finish. I said he doesn't give a pass because of his performance. But for me, I like the fact that he assumed that responsibility amidst knowing he wasn't playing his best game. And that's hard. Like, Mexico wasn't able to do it right afterwards. Right? They missed their penalty. The guy, he wasn't able to to the occasion. Yeah.
I mean, you're giving Christian credit for making the penalty kick.
110%.
Okay, why wouldn't you?
Okay. Yeah. I just want to make it clear. I'm just asking a question, brother. I just want to make it clear. You're giving him the credit for making the penalty kick. That's all I wanted to know.
Should we not?
No, I just wanted to know. Like you're saying.
My question to you is, if you didn't perform, but you made the penalty kick,
and which is a very hard thing to do.
Kick, do you not give him credit?
Huh?
If a player makes a penalty kick, do you not give them credit?
Yeah. Yeah, he gets credit.
In a final?
He has credit. I'm just saying overtime? That. Here's my thing about the U.S. national team, right? I want these guys to earn it. That's all I'm saying. Like, Gio Reyna, phenomenal player, bright future. But I think he'll be him as well as even Mark and well as the younger players who are under 24 years old. They need competition to get the best out of them. If Gio Reyna comes here and he thinks no matter how he plays, he's going to be able to start at 18 years old, it's not the best for his development.
I don't think so because you saw what Aaronson did.
I love
in the second game. Yeah, you know I do. Yeah, that's my favorite. That's my favorite player.
Yeah, but Aaronson. So, but maybe remember Aaronson performed. Did he play a lot in Mexico? He came on. He knows he has to fight Pulisic and he has to fight.
Yeah, but you're talking about. But you're saying that he needs competition when he comes to the national team, and I think he has that.
So that's a question though. So would you start Aaronson over Gio over his performance?
Right now.
Next game.
It depends. It depends on
The weather?
No, it depends on the format because they're both different players. They're both different players, you know?
I thought they were fighting for the same position. That's why I mentioned that.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Mookie likes to say stuff just for controversy.
And a thought, right? We're here for a conversation. So the whole thing is, you know.
But to answer your question, right now.
I see it, Gooch.
I would still probably start Gio. So I think Aaronson would be better coming off the bench more than Gio would come off the bench.
Look, you know what I liked, and I don't know if he's a starter right now. It could be later on. Timothy Weah adds a different dynamic to the squad. Like, he's a different kind of player. He's always forward moving. He might not be as combination minded as Gio or the rest of them, but this man, like, he just wants to go at you. And I think if he can fine tune that, it'll be a great threat for that team to have, because I don't see too many other players like that in that mold. I could be wrong.
That's like a, he's like a Eddie Johnson.
He's like a young Bees.
Nah.
He's like a young Bees.
I agree with that.
He do all, a better he do, version though. I didn't do all. Shut up.
He passes him. Himself the ball. He's like, I got it.
What's the right mix? You know, who blends and plays well together under Greg's?
I think especially the front three. For me, we always said, you know, it's Tyler, Weston, and for me, Musa. I think in the top three, it's going to be, you know, who's really what combination is the best. Not to say who's better, who's not. It's what mm-hmm. combination, because you got Christian, you got Gia, you got Timothy, you got Sargent, you got DK, you got Sabachu.
What's Sabachu's new name now?
P-Funk. That's his mother's maiden name.
How you say that again?
P-Funk.
P-Funk. Can we call him P-Funk?
Not Funk.
Nah, that's my name. That's my name.
You have to also ask if Jazzy Yardis is in the mix.
He has to. Yeah, I think.
So there's a multitude of different combinations.
Josie Altidore?
If you want to put him in there, put him in there. I'm just saying, like, they got a coach once told me, it's not my job to put the best player on the team. It's my job to put the best team on the field.
Right.
And if it's not the best players that make the best combination, then you got to go with it.
And I think just with what we've seen from Greg Berhalter, and not even just these last two games because they're recent, but in the game, other games, he changes things around. You know, there's some things that stay, you know, kind of concrete, and he likes, you know, how some formations are. But, you know, there's a lot of competition and a lot of movement going on, especially in the midfield and forward positions. So, you know, one day it could be Jordan, depending on the defense. One day it can be Sargent, and then the midfields can always change. You know, you got Musa fight for a shot. Where are you going to put Christian? Is he better out wide? Is he better as a second striker? You know, and whatever, you know, is he – it depends. So I think all those things change with, and he has that flexibility. And I think that's good for the national team, because they can depend more on how they play and worry about them more so than an opponent. You know what I'm saying? Cause we all been to, you know, you've been to teams where you always change your formation and always change, you know, your number 10 or your seven or your six on how they play. Mm-hmm. I think now, you know, we have the luxury of the players that we have in our squad with the flexibility of how they move up top, that we can unbalance things and we can worry about ourselves more than have to always worry about the defense and what they're going to do. Okay, they're going to play this way, then we can do this. How they're going to play, then we can do that.
I think it's good to add that, like, Mexico switched up their formation without really switching up their players. Like, they were able to their players are capable of playing in different formations. I don't know if we have the players that can just on a whim switch to a three back for a four back and, like, not change the characters in there yet, right? So I think for Greg and the staff, it's finding the right players that want to play the system that you want to do, but also finding the right system that better suits the quality of your players. So it's, and they have only, you know, a couple months to figure this out. So let's see.
Do you guys have an idea what Greg's system is now off of these last games that we had 2021? Do you have a better understanding of what his system is? What's his style of play?
Nope.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you the crack crew, somebody who has a stellar career. I mean, started out with U.S. 17 national team.
Hello.
Hold on. I ain't ready for you yet, Clint. You started out with U.S. 17 national team, was Gatorade Soccer Player of the Year, two-time All-American, drafted by the L.A. Galaxy, did 11 years in the MLS, scored over 67 goals, was the 2002 World Cup, first goal to score in the World Cup 2002, had 5 goals in one game, but at the end of the day, I saw him run New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a big round of applause for the best Clint, Mr. Clint Mathis.
The man, the myth, the legend. You've been under the radar for about 10 years now.
Yeah, which is a good thing.
Great thing.
What's up, Clint? How you doing, man? It's Beast.
Yeah, nah, doing great, brother. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. Good to hear your voice, bro.
Hey, Clint, man, yeah. We were told by your publicist we couldn't show your face because we didn't pay enough money. So, thank you.
That's the first reason. The second reason, nobody wants to see it.
Well, Clint, this is
where you calling from,
a long
man.
Time, brother. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, no, good hearing from all you guys, man. I'm excited.
Where you call? Bees want to know where you're calling from.
I'm calling lovely Southern California. I live in San Clemente now. Nice. So got some work stuff I'm got to head up to doing. That's why we can't see my beautiful face because I'm driving. So getting ready to go to this meeting here in a little bit. So just want to make sure I got to at least take the time and hang out and chat with you guys. It's been a long time.
Hey, Clint, before hearing our beautiful voices, what were you listening in the car when you have a long drive? What are you playing?
Well, right now, I mean, it's probably not going to be in the forte like it used to be in the day because my kids don't really need to listen to that kind of music. So it's actually a little country. I brought my grassroots back out, my redneck style side. So it's country music.
Man, you went from P. Diddy to country style. I love it, man. I love it.
Exactly. Well, half the country songs now are rap songs anyway. So.
It's funny you say that. There's a new rapper, a country rapper who's coming out, and he's. I'll make sure I send you his album, man. I'm working with him, so I'll make sure I send his album. But Clint, I just want to get started off. I mean, you had a obviously one of the best careers, and you're one of the most phenomenal and most electrifying footballers to come through the U.S. Soccer Federation. But am I clear that you're not in the Hall of Fame?
That is correct. I am not.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, the way I've always looked at it is, yeah, accolades are great. At the end of the day, you know, I didn't always do the right things and go down the straight and narrow path throughout my whole career. But the one thing that, you know, was most important to me was my peers. If I had respect from them in the locker room, you know, on, off the field, afterwards, whether we're going out to dinner or going to a nightclub, you know, that's what I cared about is the camaraderie. But, definitely. You know, I'd be lying if I didn't say, hey, it would be nice to be in that. But I'm not going to lose too much sleep over it because I know what, you know, my peers think of me. And, yes, you know, sir. Being able to be on a podcast like this with you guys and just hearing from you, that means enough to me. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
You win our Hall of Fame. Just know that.
Clint, that's more important.
Hey, Clint. Let me ask you a question. So do you think you got more respect after you retired? You know what I'm saying? Because when you were just speaking, you said, you know, you didn't always do things on the straight and narrow. So do you think that people appreciate that more after you left the game than more so when you were actually playing?
I think for those people that, you know, kind of look back and go, hey, you know what? Yeah, people thought that, yeah, I did well and I played well, but you know, it might have been overshadowed some by, you know, the off the field festivities or whatnot. But, you know, that's what made me who I was. You know, I didn't really put the pressure on myself. I mean, you can even talk to Bees when we're in the World Cup in South Korea. You know, I show up late on a game day because I was given the wrong time, but walk in with a mohawk and Bruce is ready to kill me. But at the end of the day, you know, yeah, that's a huge stage of our own, but I never let it bother me or get me worried or anything. I was always the one that's trying to make jokes and be like, hey guys, this is just another day in the life, dude. Let's just go out and have fun and let's don't stress out. Let's don't, you know, panic or anything like that. And, you know, that's the way I live my life.
You think it's safe to say that you were like the first to be unapologetically you in that program, right? Like you were who you were.
I would say so.
Yeah.
I would say so. I used to always get the, yeah, I used to always get the, you know, I was the blunt of the, if things didn't go right, I was an easy scapegoat, put it that way. Mm-hmm. And I was okay with that. But, you know, some people can't handle it, couldn't handle the pressure, or they would put their head down and, you know, it would just mess their whole game up or mind up. I just said, all right, you can blame me as much as you want. Let's just go out and play and leave me alone for right now kind of thing. And, you know, so many people, like, I don't know if you guys remember Billy Walsh that used to play the Metro Stars and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he goes, these guys were so dumb that they didn't take advantage of you. He goes, you were like the Dennis Rodman of soccer.
Yep.
He goes, why? I mean, you think about, like, nowadays, yeah, you can't do, you know, half the crap that we did back in the day without cell phones, but you know, if you were to do something like that and, you know, you work it into nowadays or whatever with the way that the media and marketing and everything else, and, you know, the MLS could have done that, you know, back in the day with myself and, you know, just trying to get soccer out there because, you know, back when we started then, I mean, nobody gave a shit about soccer.
I remember, I was going to say it still. I remember in 02 World Cup, the game, you know, the first game before the Portugal game. And I remember us doing a shadow, you know, the starting team against the team that was starting. And yeah, I remember, you know, as coaches do, they say, okay, you got to kind of play like Rui Costa. You got to play like Figo. You have to play like Conceição, whatever. So Clint being Clint, and obviously he was upset that he wasn't starting. But Clint being Clint, every time he got the ball, hey, who are you? Were you Figo? You a Figo, right?
Like, I think so.
But he was yelling the whole time on the thing. No, Figo got the ball. Figo, come say, go.
Oh, yeah.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I mean,
we get ready for the game, and we laughing throughout the whole pitch, laughing on the field just because Clint called himself Figo throughout the whole training.
Yeah, and I think we beat the starters like 3-0 in like 15 minutes.
Yeah, I did. I remember that. That was funny.
Yeah, no, I was an asshole, but hey, I had to release somehow. So,
Clint, now older, a father, I would assume different than you were as a player. Is there anything that you regret doing, or is there anything you would have perhaps done differently in being your own personality?
Yeah, I mean, if I wanted to be a smarter businessman, I would never say regret anything, because I never really did anything to hurt anybody or anything like that. So I wouldn't use the word regret, but change some decisions, of course. I mean, but that's called a crystal ball. And, you know, if we had that crystal ball back then, yeah, of course you're going to make different decisions and things of that sort. But the way I think about life is, I mean, you got to just go and live it. And that's how you learn if you're making right decisions or bad decisions is, you know, you got to live through life. You can tell people that, hey, this is the way to do it. This is the wrong way to do it. But nobody's ever going to learn until they go live it and find out for themselves.
Yeah, it makes you wiser, man. But I look at these players now and I see how they're on their Instagram and they posting with this, posting with that. And I'm looking at them like they don't realize that Clint Mathis, before social media, was the king of New York City. The things that I've never experienced seeing a professional footballer in America live a life like an NBA player.
You know, well, a lot of times they were right there next to me.
Exactly. Exactly. If you needed to get somewhere, I can call Clint. I know I get in the club. I know the restaurant would give me some seating. I mean, I joked with these guys before you came on, and it seems like a small thing now, but back then I was mesmerized. You had a Sprint deal and you had a free Sprint phone. I was like, man, he can make long distance phone calls anytime he wants.
People always say, hey, what do you think? Is soccer like a God-given talent? Is it a work ethic type of thing? And I go with both.
Yeah.
I was like, but as good as you think that God gave me talent to play soccer, that's not his best attribute that he gave me. And, you know, God gave me the ability to be a people person.
Definitely.
And, you know, I can go hang out with the boys in the club, listening to rap music, or I can go down the street with my cutoff jeans, wife beater, and hang out with my rednecks drinking PBR.
Definitely.
And so I'm a people person, man. I love good people. You know, we need more good people in this world right now with all the crap that's going on. But
preach.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I tried to just continue to live my life. And I wanted people to have fun. I mean, I won't forget the time Beasley, you know, Chicago comes in town, we're playing. Yeah, we got to try to kill each other on the field. But, you know, after the game, he's already set up for his birthday party up in the booth.
Yes, sir.
Popping bottles with models.
Yes, sir.
That sounds like Beez.
Yeah,
Clint, that brings us to a situation. Beez has told a story in this podcast, and I think that he misread and said your name and put you in this story, and I think he's trying to hurt your reputation. You know,
I love Beez telling it. He know. He'll know what I'm talking about. So remember, Clint, we had the qualifier. I don't think you was a part of the squad, but it was me and Corey.
I was injured.
Yeah, you were injured. You was injured. So you're like, yo, I'm going to this club, I'm going to this spot, blah blah blah. Y'all come with me, and we like, all right, bet. You know, so me and Corey went to the spot with you, and that's the night that I saw Leonardo DiCaprio in the club, in the lounge or wherever we went to. I never forget that he had a dad hat on, kind of, you know, pushed down a little bit, sitting and, with a chick. Yep.
And 20 women.
And then, anyway.
And the thing is, I was going to say, and the thing is, nowadays, those same girls around them are still the same age.
But yeah, you remember that story. So then, after that, obviously the time we're supposed to be going to, I think it was, I want to say Grenada or something like that for a qualifying match. But then the time that we were supposed to be leaving the hotel changed and it went to earlier than later. And then me and Corey got to the air. We went straight to the airport. Pam tried to save our ass, but it didn't work. And Bruce had, you know, came and talked to me like, yo, this ain't what it is. I'm letting y'all go. And then obviously the elder statesman like Claudio and I think Eddie and Ernie was like, nah, we need them. They have to play. They just gotta, you know, take a fine and give it to a charity. So that's what we did. But that was one of my famous nights with Clint. And then I meet, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh no. And just to go back from earlier, what we said, I got in trouble for that night too.
By who? You weren't even in the squad. Who? How'd you get in trouble?
Don't worry. I got phone calls up to me by, what are you doing taking these boys out? Yeah, wow. Bruce would call me every once in a while.
Damn. That was just a normal Tuesday night for Clint, Leonardo DiCaprio.
Honestly.
If I was injured, man, I had nothing else to do.
Hey, what was your relationship like with Bruce Arena?
Yeah, it was a great relationship, man. I mean, a lot of people thought that it was bad, but it was like that love-hate relationship. Yeah. I was the guy that was the son that, you know, he wanted to have, but he had to say, hey, I need to reprimand this guy. And then, you know, you have to have a downfall, and I'm okay with that. But one thing I do respect from Bruce, and a lot of people don't know this, so keep it quiet. Just kidding. is when he brought me back when I was leaving Colorado to Red Bulls when he was coaching there. And then after that season, you know, he got pushed out and he went in. Not once I found out, I went to his office. I was like, hey, Bruce, you know, I'm sorry to hear this or whatever. This is bullshit, whatever kind of thing. I don't agree with it, but I just want to come and tell you, you know, in case you leave before I got to see you. And he goes, hey, Clint, you know what? He goes, you're the only person just walked in this office and told that to me.
Wow.
And he goes, and I know whatever relationship that we had and what people think, he goes, I've always respected what you've done. And now I realize more than ever through all those times that you were always there to try to do the right thing for everybody.
Definitely.
And I see that now.
Definitely.
And that's all I needed. I love it, man.
Yeah. Respect.
That goes about the stuff that you said behind the scenes. Like, you don't care about the awards and that you're respected by your peers. You're respected by your former coaches. And at the end of the day, when all said and done, that's the only recognition that we all need, right?
Right. I mean, I can't take any of this shit to bed with me when I die. So as long as I know I can feel this when I'm getting, you know, praises from you guys, from people like Bruce, the ones that everybody else always respects, I only care about those kind of people respecting me. And that's all I can do in life. I don't need any awards or money or whatever. Yeah, all that stuff's great, but you can't take that with you.
True. This is one I need to know about, but you talk about respect. And listen, man, for me, when I was watching you before I got on the national team, 02 World Cup and everything, and then you went, made your move to Germany, you know, talking about respect, I want to know what happened, what went down, what went wrong while you were in Germany. And don't sugarcoat it.
So, no. So you mean what happened with the deal with Bayern Munich or once I was in Germany and why I came back?
Well, I'll take all of the above, man.
Well, let's start with Germany, because that's the only reason I ended up at Hanover. And so when Bayern Munich, they ended up winning Champions League that year. And then they were coming through New York, and this is when it was back with the Metro Stars at Old Giant Stadium. And we were playing a scrimmage game, against the team or whatnot. And so, yeah, I know that it's not going to be their best game. It's, you know, they just came off Champions League, but I was like, hey, this is my time to go out there, do what I love doing and try to put it on them. And you never know what would happen. So I go in that game, whatever, played really well. It's one of my better games I played in a while, actually. And we ended up winning 2-0. I think I scored one goal, chipped the keeper, ended up going to dinner or whatever. People started talking. ended up getting a phone call a little bit later, and my agent's calling, my German agent, my American agent, and they go, hey, Munich wants to fly you out to come see the facilities. They're interested in you coming to Munich. I said, okay. So we had a weekend
okay,
off.
Okay, you know, casual.
Yeah. I said, all right, when are we doing this? And I was like, all right, so I don't have to tell anybody. I was like, we have the weekend off. We had no games. They gave us whatever, the 3 days off. So flew to Munich for the weekend, went and sat with Uli, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, ended up going through, came to an agreement on numbers, had a dinner, had beer, signed the contract, done deal.
Wow.
Well, back then it was, hey, you had to worry about, you know, the league, proving everything. It's a lot different than it is now, obviously. And so ended up having a deal. At that point, I just signed, I guess, I think I had a year and a half left on my contract. And so, I mean, you think about numbers now. Back then, when my second year, I signed a 4-year deal. First year was $100,000. Okay. And then it would go, I think, $20,000 for the next, you know, 3 years as a base. Well, also put in my contract that, hey, if I reach all these bonuses, it automatically rolls into my salary. So I hit that was that year that I scored the 5 goals in the game and did all that stuff. Well, I maxed out all my bonuses. So my salary now was more than my 4th year salary. And so, but the reason I put that into perspective is because Tim Howard, he just signed a 5-year deal. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is right before he went to Man U. Remember those days?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So Tim had 5 years on the contract, maybe 4.5. I had a year and a half. So flew to Munich, blah, 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 come through. Now there's discussions with the league. And by the way, my first year, I think I would have made $1.8 million. But no, I was making $170,000.
All right.
Yeah. And they flat out told me, they said, hey, if you play more games than our guy last year, the least amount of play, the play on the team with the least amount of games was 19 wow. games.
Yeah.
And they go, if you play more games than that, we'll rip this contract up and give you a brand new one.
Wow.
I said, okay, no problem.
Right.
So now the league gets involved with a, you know, and they go, hey, he's never played in Europe. You know what? We'll give you this amount. The league's like, no, we'll take $6 million. Well, at that time, you know, we hadn't heard of any transfer fees going like this.
Right.
And so they said, no, we're not going to give you $6 million. What we'll do is we'll give you, I think it was almost structured just like Tim Howard's was, ended up being like $4.5 million or something. Mm. $4 million, $4.5 million. League said, no, we'll go ahead and we'll take Clint. So they came back to me. Said, hey, we'll give you a new contract. We'll give you $1 million a year to stay in the league. Go through. I'm not trying to be long-winded on this story, but you wanted everything.
No, please
be long-winded.
Yeah, go ahead.
Long-winded.
Yeah.
So then the league offers me, and we're getting it to it. So it's all right. Well, if you want to keep me here and you want to do this marketing stuff you're talking about, it's got to be $1 million a year then. So like, all right, yeah, I think we can get that. Going to get Pepsi to pay it. Well, back then it wasn't supposed to happen like that, but you can get anything done, I guess, in this world if you want it bad enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we go down to the one of the last few games. We were playing DC United. Somebody came and slid tackle me, and I stepped on the guy's back, red card, out, missed the game. All we needed was to tie or win one more game to make the playoffs. Well, we go through, didn't end up making the playoffs, and the coach and the GM at that time blamed the season on me, and the league took the $1 million contract away from me.
What?
Before I could sign it.
The league took it away from you?
Yeah, they said we no longer offer this contract.
Yeah, the league owned everything. Yeah.
So it wasn't New York that was like, we don't want to give it to you anymore.
Well, those two said that I was the reason that we didn't make the team.
Wow. See, New York really didn't want to pay that money.
Wow. The league signed out a contract, right?
Yeah, I know, but like sometimes maybe the club tells the league, listen, don't do it anymore. You know,
this was before that time, yeah.
Oh,
the league could have put me on any team that the league could have put me on any team they wanted to at that point.
Yeah.
Let me understand the chronologically. At that point, you had already passed on the Bayern because New York has said they're going to match it.
I didn't pass on the Bayern. I had no say so. I wanted to go to Munich.
Right.
But they had to agree on a transfer fee because I had no rights then.
Jeez.
So it wasn't enough to me. The league said, well, you know what? We're not signing it. And so they got twofold. So they kept me for another year and a half. I said, well, I'm not re-signing. I don't care what you offer me. And then that's how I ended up going to Germany. So went and tried out with a couple teams. almost signed with Mick McCarthy at Sunderland. But he had to wait, and then he was waiting on a board meeting on Monday. I was like, well, I can't wait, Mick. I got to leave Friday. And it's so funny. I found out he said that was one of the worst mistakes he's ever made in his coaching career by letting me leave Sunderland. So then I signed at Hanover, and okay, sirrah, sirrah. So everything was good. Ralph Rognick there got along well. Then we brought in Ewald Lienen, who is very harsh. I mean, Germans are, you know, blunt and to the point, which is great. Germans kind of don't even like him. And so he brought in some of his players, and Beza know this story too, because I believe he was at the game. I ended up, we were playing at Soldier Field. We were playing Poland. Came in for a game, and during training, I ended up tweaking like my Achilles going to do a volley. And so I was rehabbing, and I didn't start the game. I came in second half. That's when we whipped the ball in. I crossed it into Bocanegra for the header win in Chicago, yeah. Game over. So then we go to preseason, and we're running in the forest. I step on a rock and bust my ankle open. And from then on out, he would never start me, never do any of this stuff. That was what, well, I take that back. He did. He put me in the pen. That's where the whole watch, when yeah. I point at my watch, yeah. and I grab myself. So that was that issue. But I was looking to go to some other teams. He was going to get fired. And the president even told me, hey, Clint, just relax. If we don't win today, the coach is getting fired. Well, that goal that I scored off that volley actually saved his job. So I went through that, and then I was looking to go to some other three other German teams, but then I get a phone call from John Ellinger, and John Ellinger goes, hey Clint, I just wanted to call you. He goes, remember back when we went to the World University Games? This is right when we were out of college. And he goes, you told me if I ever got a professional coaching job, you would drop everything what you have and you'd come play for me. And I said, yeah, John, I told you that. I'm a man of my word. I was like, where are you at? He goes, well, we're starting a team, Salt Lake City, RSL. He goes, I'm going to be the head coaching job. I said, all right, I'll get out of my contract. So got out of my contract with Hanover. We parted ways happily. And that's how I ended back.
And won a cup.
Yep. So I said, I'd rather keep my word than, you know, screw somebody, lie to them. And then it wasn't the right business decision by any means. If I would have known now, or then what I know now, I could have been like, hey, John, I'm not going to play for you, but I'll write you a $100,000 check if you call it even.
Yeah.
You know, Clint, one of the reasons why we do these shows is to kind of bridge the gap, right, of the generations. And you giving this story is so important, so much value, right, to the next up-and-coming U.S. national team player who will go through these same type of scenarios. What's your thought process on the recent core and the recent games of the U.S. national team and these young ballers that they have playing in Europe?
No, I've been happy, to be honest with you. I've been very happy to see that, no disrespect to MLS. I love this league. That's what, made my whole career. And you know, tell them where we would be if it wasn't for this league. But it's still got, a ways to go. Our national team kids got a ways to go. But to see the age that they're at, it reminds me of the Bees Leagues and the Landons that, in the U.S., kids that were 18, 19 years old had no business playing on the world stage coming from this country. And even the rest of the world, if you look at it. But that has changed so much. I mean, if you're, just now getting on the national team and you're 26 years old, dude, you're yeah. over. Right. You're way
yeah.
too old.
Way too yeah. old. Way too old.
It's
way
not too for you if you haven't made it by 24.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's good to see that we got guys that it's not just guys that are, the older guys that have been playing for years and years and years, and we're having to hold on to them. You have these young guys that are playing at Barcelona, playing at Juventus, and not just on the team. I mean, these guys are starting and making huge impact for these clubs. And it's great to finally see that we have that. And, the team was struggling for, I would say the last year and a half or so, before COVID or whatever. Still wasn't getting the results and things of that sort. But to be able to watch this, the Nations League and what they did and how resilient they were, because, once Mexico scored that second goal, everybody is going, oh, shit, here we go again. Mm-hmm. Just giving it away or whatever. But these guys were resilient. They fought back hard. And they're fucking good soccer players. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that we never got respect for, I don't think, until like the 2002 World Cup. you know, they would be like, yeah, these Americans, they're unbelievable athletes. They, you know, they're going to be able to stick around in games because they're big, strong, they can run fast. Well, I think we, you know, really kind of changed that attitude in 02 and said, well, these guys actually played soccer too. And I think that, you know, we've had some, you know, ups and downs, not making the World Cup, you know, the last go round. And I think Greg has done a great job with these younger kids and, you know, just to be able to have that good group of core young kids. Hopefully we can continue to keep it going.
Yeah. I mean, we were speaking about this before you came on, like, it's crazy to know what the average age of the team is, right? Because like you said, back in the day, you only got like a handful of the youngsters. You know, it was Bees and Landon and Bobby were the first batch. And then, you know, I didn't come in for years later, but we were the minority in that group of experienced players, you being one of them. And then now it's kind of like flipped where the experienced player is definitely the minority in the group. And like the younger, vibrant players are definitely overwhelmingly majority. So it's a turn of a time. I think you don't just see it in the U.S. squad. You know, you saw it years ago at the Belgium squad. You saw it in the English squad. You know, they're saying that they're going to be a lot of promise. So I think it's the transition of sport, really.
No, for sure. Yeah, 100% right. I mean, I think I was 26 when I played that World Cup, and I was just getting into my prime. But and that just shows the difference.
I want to state something, though. In 2002 World Cup team, you know, a lot of people think that United States national team players are just starting now to play in Europe. And you guys had, you know, players playing for, you know, Brad Friedel was on Blackburn at that time. Frankie Hadick was on Bayer Leverkusen. Greg Berhalter was on Crystal Palace. John O'Brien was on Ajax. David Regis was on Mets. Eddie Lewis was on Fulham. I mean, Ernie Stewart playing in Holland, Joe Max Maher, Everton. I mean, Cody Reina, Sutherland. I mean, you know, Bees were just about to go overseas. You know, you had Tony Sanna playing at Nuremberg. I mean, Casey Keller was at Tottenham. We had players playing in Europe, and a lot of times people forget about that, right? And forget about, they think the U.S. history just started now. You know, so I just wanted to put that in there so people realize, do your due diligence. Like,
well, I think that's one thing with, and I've said this before in past interviews with U.S. soccer. They don't promote the history of U.S. soccer. And I'm talking about before us, before 2002. I'm talking about the 80s, the 90s. They don't. Yeah. You know, and that's one thing that I think that U.S. soccer can be better at is that, you know, tell these young kids how they got to where they are now. You know, and I'm talking about not even the players, because not even the players don't even know. Yeah. You know, but I'm talking about more so even the fans, the young fans that are coming up. Like, we have history in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, we have players that have, you know, played in World Cups. I'm talking about, you know, from the 70s, 80s, all throughout, you know what I'm saying? We never missed a World Cup until recently.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you know what I'm saying? And we don't know nothing about, well, I mean, I do, but we don't know as a country, we don't know a lot about those players and those eras because we don't celebrate our history. And I think that's one thing that U.S. soccer can do better at, celebrate our history in U.S. soccer.
For sure.
But Clint, before we let you go, tell us about you being on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and at that time,
he took my spot.
Huh?
He took my spot.
How was the attention from people?
Hey. Well, as B said, he took his spot. Actually, I let you on the ESPN magazine with me. So.
There you go.
I'm just fucking around. It's so funny. I got a little story about that one, too, which is pretty crazy at the time how, like, I think that, and like I said, this ain't about me, but I think just some of the actions that I did and showed that, hey, this guy is a human being just like anybody else, but, you know, he has a very good talent. And the reason I say that and preface it is because, one, you know, we're very fortunate to get to do that ESPN shoot with Bees and Landon, and then did this shoot and was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and I know Ernie was on it, you know. Handful of soccer guys have done it before, but the cool story about this is they sat there and told me that, hey, you know what, this is a preview going into the World Cup, blah blah blah. And then I think I was in Korea, I got a phone call and they were telling me, hey Clint, this has never happened before, but back-to-back issues, we're talking about putting you on the cover again.
Wow.
And so it was going to be back-to-back on the cover. And then just like Bees alerted to earlier, I didn't start that first game, and that's why I wasn't on that second cover. This is from what I was told. And wow. then they put Landon on that next cover.
You lucky you didn't get chosen to do that shoot where Bees was
He was in there.
Oh, was he
wait,
in
wait,
there?
Wait, he yeah. was in there.
Oh, was he in there?
Yeah.
He was in there. Yeah. One of the worst ones.
We popping up that picture right now as we speak, by the way.
Yeah, you were one of the worst ones.
Bring it.
Mine was
shit. No chance. No, I didn't say yours is bad.
I said one of them.
Well, I can name three that were worse than mine.
Yeah, Landon,
Brian, Pablo, and Brian. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My gosh.
I agree. Yeah. Those three.
And then I think I went into the other one. Casey was in like a pair of U.S. soccer shorts. He wasn't even putting on clothes.
I need to know how they even convinced y'all to do that. Like,
who produced that?
Yeah.
I hope he was fired after that. He or she.
Yeah. I have no idea. I wasn't paying attention. I was just like, look. Let's just get this done so I can get home.
Hey, transitioning to coaching, did you enjoy it or you realize that you were over it and it's time to switch it up?
No, I did enjoy it. I love being out there. It was different. I'm not going to lie. I mean, we've already talked about how the generations are definitely different of how we had to do things. And, you know, it's a funny story when you were sitting there talking about, you know, people on Instagram, this and that. I'm sitting here in a locker room and I see two of my players just sitting in the locker room and they both start laughing at the same time. And one of them was Harry Schiff. It was pretty funny. And I was like, hey, you guys laughing. I was like, please tell me you're not texting your teammate right here, are you? And I was literally making a joke out of it.
Yeah.
And he just like looked at me and got quiet. I was like, give me that phone. I was like, are you really texting him? He's 10 feet in front of you. Why don't you talk to him? But they were literally texting each other, and they were the only two in the locker room, and they were texting each other. So I had to get used to some stuff like that. I did love it. Unfortunately, you know, Frank got let go, and then they let the rest of the staff go, and I was looking at, you know, getting some other positions. And then one day I was here in California sitting on the beach just reminiscing, and I go, you know what? I was like, I did this my whole life. I was like, it ain't about me anymore. Mm. I got four kids. Why don't I get my weekends back? And let me just go be a normal 9-to-5er, find something I like doing and keep me busy and just go that route. But that way I know that, hey, I get to spend time with these kids because it's about raising them. And like I said, I did this my whole
life. You there?
And then,
okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Now you broke out for a little bit.
No, yeah, sorry about that.
God bless you, man. I'm glad you found peace and you switched it up, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, granted, do I miss it? Yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to be out there on the field, and half the time I'm like, what are they doing? But, you know, that's being a spectator, right? You don't even have to know anything about soccer, and you're still going to say that.
Definitely.
Sidebar, Bees has a club that he's, you know, that might open up doors for you later on. So, you know, Bees owns a club now.
Hey, when you want to come out of retirement, man, let me know.
I know good and well they ain't letting Brother Bees open up no joint in Fort Wayne.
I already got it, man. We
soccer club, soccer club. He's thinking nightclub.
You're already thinking
in the
head of
the gutter. He's thinking
South Beach. last quick question, and this could be I want this to be off the cusp. Favorite teammate you ever played with?
Ooh, I'd have to give that probably to Pablo. Mastroianni.
Wow. Why is that? I wouldn't have anticipated that one, but go ahead. Why?
Because that man did so much legwork for me and won the ball. Because I was going to need to say him or Chris Armas on the national team, because both those guys killed themselves for me. And it was, I mean, Pablo was good with his feet. Chris was good with his feet. Mm-hmm. But when we were on fire, they go, Clint, I'll win the ball. You just get open and let me give it to you.
Nice.
And like I said, those guys literally killed themselves for me, and you know, hopefully I served them justice by doing what I did. But off the cuff, he was my roommate on the national team. You know, we got very close. You know, did a bunch of dumb stuff together, which was even better. And he was all around good teammate to me. So off the cuff, I'd have to go with him.
How good was John O'Brien?
He was sick. To this day, it's so funny. Like, I go back, and I was real close with Tab Ramos. And so Tab was always the one that I thought, like, one-on-one was the best U.S. soccer player. I mean, I got to play with him day in and day out. You know, I know he got injured a lot towards the end and stuff, but he was the best one-on-one player I've ever seen. And so he was amazing. But then when I got to the point where I got to play with John, and I was like, dude, this guy's been at Ajax, and he had the most unbelievable feet. It was like he was just gliding, wasn't even trying. It's like watching Usain Bolt go down to the 100 meters. It's like he's not, it doesn't even care. He doesn't even seem like he's even there. And John was so sick in practice. I've seen him make so many people just look silly. Yeah. You know, he was sick. So if I had to guess right now, I mean, we'll see what, you know, Pulisic and some of these other kids got going. But if I had to say, hey, who's the best U.S. soccer player of all time, I would have to say John O'Brien.
That's what we said it. He confirmed it right there.
There you go. Listen, Clint, turn up that country music and drive safe.
I appreciate it, fellas. And hey, thanks for having me, man. It was great to hear from all of you. And keep it going, boys. I know you guys are doing some good things in the soccer world. So if you ever need anything from me, anything like that, don't hesitate to pick up the phone.
Appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate it, Clint. Appreciate it, man.
All right,
be safe. Fellas.
Thank you, too.
My boy's a country boy. I love it.
Yeah. You didn't know that?
I know.
Georgia.
I remember I saw the P. Diddy of him, though, you know, here. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. That platform. And I know he's already a Georgian boy, but he can adapt. And he's definitely a people's person. And he's a person, you come into the room, he's going to snap on you. He's going to joke you, but he's definitely going to make you feel, you know, at home. So big shouts out to you, Clint.
Well, that's
he has some good stories. And I don't know if I ever said it. I don't know if I ever said it on the podcast or even in an interview, but what he said about MLS just making you the highest paid player, that's true. They did the same shit to me before I went to PSV. Wow. They's like, yeah, they said they don't want me to go to PSV. Obviously, it was going back and forth with the transfer fee. And Don Garber was calling me on my phone after training. It was like, all right, what's it going to take for you to stay? And I was like, I don't know. I want to go. He's like, all right, well, I'm going to make you the highest paid player in MLS. Done. That was it. And I still said no. But yeah, but what he's saying, that's what, you know, I don't think that's how it is now because of all the different rules, but that's how it was back then. That's what they were willing to do to keep their talent, you know what I'm saying, in MLS. So I can attest to that. I got the same conversation.
Makes sense. I mean, you guys were like the star player. You guys are the star players of the national team, of the league. Yeah. So he's trying to, especially back in those days, trying to gain more attraction to the sport, to the league.
Right, in the league, yeah, of course.
You guys trying to dip out, he'd be like, all right, what's it going to take?
Yeah.
My black card, what you
need? Yeah, I think now more teams obviously have more power, you know what I'm saying? But since it was still a league where it was still growing and we don't have nearly as many teams as we have now and stadiums and the infrastructure, all the great stuff that MLS has built, you know, these last 20 years. So yeah, trying to keep their top talent in America was important, but there wasn't no conversation with Chicago. It was just, he's going to do it. You know, the league, you know, and that's what I stepped in and said, you know, the league signed a contract, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So if the league, like you said, if the league want to put you somewhere, they're going to put you somewhere. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it is how it was back then, but you know, that's how it was back then.
How wild, without us alluding to anything, that he said Johnny O was the greatest player in national.
Yeah.
Tennis. We've been saying it.
Yeah. Everybody know it. Yeah.
So go back and watch that interview.
If you know, you know.
Yeah.
Try to put
that
you on.
Nasty.
And a lot of you guys don't even realize how great Clint Mathis is, right? Make sure you Google that name, hit YouTube for my younger viewers and to ones that really know the real national team fans, you know, right? And again, I know I'm in. Mixed with two legends, Aguchi Onyewu and Marcus Beasley. It's always a pleasure catching up with you fellas, and I miss you guys. And I want to make sure that everybody subscribes, rates, shares,
like.
All right. and again, we're the best kept secret. But, you know, if you know people who will enjoy this podcast, please share with them organically, right? We're going to grow this genuinely. This is something that we own, that we love to do. And we keep it moving, man. So I just want to say this show is brought to you by Bet Online and DeMarcus Beasley. What you got to say?
I'm going to say that I'm the last one to get a microphone. y'all sound great, but I sound like shit. I need to get a microphone. That's gonna be my next purchase after this episode. I'm gonna get a microphone. I change cities, so I need to get a microphone. That's all I gotta say.
Bet.
All right, y'all. Till next time.
Yeah. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.